Please lower your head and watch your step while boarding.
Welcome to the Attractions Podcast. You are all clear for dispatch. Have fun.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Attractions Podcast, sponsored by MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. I am Seth.
And I'm Carly.
And we are here to talk to you about the latest and greatest in theme park news and more, as well as what is going on in our own lives. Carly, we were apart last week. How have you been?
I have been excellent. A bit of a whirlwind. I was in Walt Disney World for 5 days. Then I went to Disneyland. A lot of work stuff in there. But the big event was I attended the return of Pixar Fest at Disneyland. It was amazing. The best way to describe it is there's literally so much, so many characters, so many new characters, dozens of food, a new parade, fireworks is back and improved. And I was thinking, like, how do I describe this to people to, you know, differentiate it from everything else that they're doing? And it's basically like an hour after hours event, but included in park admission. It was actually more than the after hour event offerings that I've experienced. There are so many characters. There was the debut of Ember from Elemental. We had Luca. It was just so elaborate. I wasn't expecting them to kind of pull out all the stops. You know, this is only running through August, but they're really doing it up. And I had a great time.
Well, I'm hoping this is going to become an annual tradition because I mentioned it in my book, hoping that they recycle this in the summer. The two big elements of this are the return of the Together Forever fireworks.
Correct.
Which the first time around, I was not blown away by them. The last time they had them, I didn't think they were Disney's best fireworks. And then there's also a parade, which I've heard some mixed reviews, some hot takes on the parade. So what were your feelings on both of those?
I love the parade. First off, the song. I don't know if you've heard it, but if you don't want to sing something for like a week straight, everyone was singing. It was really funny. It was a great parade. Floats. Basically, all the new Pixar movies are represented in there. And then at the end, they kind of throw all the oldies like Woody and Jesse, Monsters, Inc. characters on a float. But we have a Luca float. We have, you know, Four Town from Turning Red. It was, I loved it. I love the music. And I have to say, I'm not a parade person. I don't wait for parades. Whenever I see parades, it's because I'm trying to walk from A to B and I'm stopped. You know, even if the magic happens as a bop, I'm not going to be the one like waiting out for it. But I really enjoyed this parade. The song was so catchy. The fireworks were great too. They definitely added a lot since the last time we had Pixar Fest, which was 2018, and updated technology and also represented movies that were in it before.
And you know what? I'm also a little curious. The last time we had a regular parade in DCA, there was no Avengers Campus. I'm kind of curious how that parade affects crowd flow and operations. Does it bring things to a halt, or can you still navigate the?
You know what? I was there on a day where I would say it wasn't particularly busy, but we know how busy DCA gets. So I can't really speak to that. I didn't feel like it was that crazy of a park day, so it's kind of hard to tell. It definitely is tight in through there, and you know, come May, we're getting even more Pixar Fest stuff. They're adding the marketplaces, which is basically like a little food and wine festival themed Pixar.
Right. So I'm wondering how that works with the parade.
Yes, because I watched from outside of Little Mermaid, which is going to be right in that general area where they're adding the marketplace booths. So it will be curious to see, unless they surprise us and just put them somewhere else, but it'll be curious to see how they flow guests once that comes about.
Yeah, I mean, they could put them over by that Eureka water wheel outside of the Redwood Challenge trail. But trying to put them along the performance corridor, that seems like asking for trouble. Let's give people drinks and have queues right in front of a parade. That couldn't possibly go wrong.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. I think it's a great festival if you can get out there. I had like a blast, and I'm not, you know, that kind of parade person, the character person. I waited in line for the characters. I saw Barley and Ian from Onward, which was like that's my favorite movie. So if you love all things Pixar, and again, it's just, I feel like Disneyland needed a little something for the, during the day to mm-hmm. just change things up. And I think this is it.
Awesome. I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it out there. I wish I could. But I did make it out this week to Disney, Walt Disney World, to the Grand Floridian, and I got to enjoy the new 1900 Park Fair experience.
Yes.
And we will be talking about that a little bit later in the show. That was my big theme park adventure. But I was absent last time. Thanks for taking care of the show in my absence.
Of course.
I took a little Passover trip up to New Jersey and New York and got to slip into the city for a day and see a kind of, I don't know, theme park adjacent shows, maybe. I saw Water for Elephants on Broadway.
Nice.
The adaptation of the book, which was also a movie. And it's choreographed by a former Cirque du Soleil person, and the actors don't just have to sing and dance, they also have to be able to do silks and acrobatics.
Wow.
Just an amazing, amazing show. I liked it much better than the movie. Giant elephant puppet made me cry.
Sounds great.
But the other show I saw was Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. And I got to say, as a Harry Potter fan of the, you know, the books, the films, the theme parks, seeing the Broadway show was a very interesting experience. For one, because it does not use the designs that we're familiar with from the movies and the theme parks. It's, kind of original, still identifiable, but kind of an original take on the visual design. Mm-hmm. And the special effects were absolutely amazing, but the story is kind of confounding. I've read the script ahead of time, and I still couldn't understand what was going on at the time. So yeah, it was an interesting way to spend a few hundred dollars.
Yes.
I'm not holding my breath for a movie version of that or a theme park attraction.
Did you see? I saw Mrs. Doubtfire just came through the Dr. Phillips.
Absolutely did. We went to see, we flew home from New York and went straight to the theater to see Mrs. Doubtfire. And, you know, I've kind of gotten tired of these movie musicals. There was a Tootsie musical that was just kind of a train wreck. I really thought Mrs. Doubtfire was a ton of fun. I didn't think it necessarily needed to be a musical. Like, the songs themselves were not, like, the music was not anything memorable. The mm-hmm. dance numbers were great because they'd have like a whole stage full of dancing Doubtfires. Reminded me a little of the style of The Producers or La Cage aux Folles. But Rob McClure, who plays the Robin Williams role, is amazing. He was in Beetlejuice on Broadway. He did Something Rotten. He was just an incredible physical comedian and really made that show work. Without him, I'm not sure it would have been as enjoyable.
Interesting. So. I'm seeing it this week, so I was like, right. I gotta ask you about it.
Yeah. And there's also a couple performers in there with Orlando ties. UCF student and also a kid who's done a lot of work here in Orlando. So yay, Orlando people.
Go Art.
All right. Well, okay. I think that is about enough banter. And without any further ado, it's time for us to jump into the news in the queue. We are starting off at Walt Disney World's Epcot, where CommuniCore Hall is almost finished. And we now are promised that it will be open during the upcoming Epcot International Food and Wine Festival, which will be running a shorter length of time from only August 29th through November 23rd. And when I say only, 10 years ago, if I had said it was going to run from August through November, we'd be like, but we've gotten used to it starting earlier and earlier and earlier. And I know personally, it was brutal going to those opening weeks in the worst part of summer and trying to eat all this food. It will be nice to have Epcot Light back for, Epcot Classic, however you want to call it. But festival-free Epcot will actually be around for a whole summer this year.
Yeah, I think this is such great news. I mean, it's not cute to be hunched over a garbage can, shoveling food in your mouth in 20 degree weather. I personally, when did they last have it around this star? I guess 2018, 2019?
Yeah.
I think it was the last time we had it around the start. Mm-hmm. I personally, these years when it started in July, I kind of ignored that the festival even started because I just can't eat outside. One is 120 degrees and it's.
Yeah. It was one thing during the pandemic years when they had the festival center, the World Show, the former Millennium, I'm always going to call it the Millennium Building.
World Show Place. Yes.
World Show Place open with that air conditioning kicking. That's fine. I'll spend a couple hours eating in there if it's 100 degrees outside. But since they got rid of that, hopefully this Communicore Hall will take up a little of the slack. Because let's be honest, these days it's still pretty hot by the end of August and into September.
I'm hot year round.
in case you've been hiding under a rock since this event started way back in 1996, can't believe it's been that long.
I have to say, I remember when it started, there was like a little potato pancake with a scoop of caviar on it. And I remember my parents asking me to eat it. And it was one of my earliest and favorite Disney food memories. Long time ago.
Well, once again, we're going to have limited time marketplaces with food and drink, free Eat to the Beat concerts, a Ratatouille scavenger hunt. All the details on that are going to be announced later. But what they have announced is that Communicore Hall, which is sort of the replacement for the west side of Innoventions where the Starbucks used to be, is going to be debuting. It's actually debuting on June 10th. With a temporary Encanto show, but they have said that it is now also going to have special offerings yet to be announced during the Food and Wine Festival.
Yes, and if I remember correctly, back in the day in the old building, that's where they had that glow Food and Wine Festival booth with the donut that glowed in the dark.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to remember what it was called, but I love those indoor festival use of spaces. I mean, anytime... could be inside. I'm happy.
And I miss the days back when they would have the Festival Center inside the Wonders of Life Pavilion. Ugh. And they had the chocolate exhibit where you could always pick up a free chocolate. And there were places to have seminars and
merch. Yeah.
DCA for their food festival has been having chefs and wine experts come in. Some of them are paid, some of them are free. I really hope that we see a return to that. Because that's what made it a real festival and not just an opportunity to be upsold on hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah, I think for me, I mean, I love the Epcot festivals. Food and Wine is my least favorite. It's just grown into become something that it's not what it kind of started as. I mean, yeah, we don't have the seminars. So, yes, there's that.
Yep. But what we do have is merchandise. We've got some preview pictures of new merchandise coming to the 2024 Food and Wine Festival. That includes festival-branded ceramic mugs, measuring cups, cutting boards, and, of course, salt and pepper shakers shaped like Epcot garbage cans.
It always goes back to the garbage can.
I like this little Remy cooking timer.
Yes, cute.
And Figment's back, of course. There's a Loungefly mini backpack and a water bottle, both featuring Figment. Maybe that's a hint that he's finally going to get something happen to his pavilion. Lots of rumors swirling on that, but who knows? This is just the first of many fall events happening at Disney World. Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party coming back in August through October. And then the holiday season kicks off in early November, with the Food and Wine Festival ending on November 23rd, presumably to make way for the Festival of the Holidays.
Yes. So basically, August, we are going to get HHN and Food and Wine all within a span of the same weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be intense.
Exciting, though. Very happy they moved it back. I love Epcot without a festival. I'm sorry. You know, I love the festivals.
Yep.
Some of them, I really love them, but I just love Epcot as Epcot.
Yeah. And you can't really appreciate the festivals for what they are if there's always a festival. If every day is special, then no day is special.
Leave us wanting more.
Right. And if you are planning on attending, Mouse Fan Travel can help get you there. Next up, just down the street at Hollywood Studios, that park is going to be marking their 35th anniversary. Kicking off on May 1st with a birthday ceremony and limited time merchandise. If you you want to attend, there's going to be a special moment at 11 a.m. on May 1st inside the theater where they have the Beauty and the Beast show. I'm certain people are going to be lined up from rope drop for that. They haven't detailed, but exactly what's going to happen, but I guess there'll be some executives and also some characters appearing.
Yes, and they are going to be operating for the merchandise of virtual queue, which I think is a smart idea because they're going to be hot ticket items.
Yes, so they're going to be selling over at the Stage One Company store that's near the exit of Muppet Vision 3D.
I missed that store.
Yeah, they've got a... they're going to be having a Loungefly mini backpack. They got t-shirts. They've got a pin. They've got a hat. And it's going to work in the app, just like getting a virtual queue for Tron or Guardians of the Galaxy. It's going to open up at 7 a.m. And you're going to either need an admission or, if you're an annual pass holder, a park reservation for the park on that day in order to join the queue.
Yes. And I'm curious, you know, it's always interesting with these merch events like Epcot 35, you know, I was waiting in line to get everything and then you end up getting to be able to get it anyway because they have so much. So I'm curious, I have to be honest, I don't love this merchandise. It's nothing really exciting.
It is not a very eye-catching color scheme. It's kind of a very muted blue and orange color scheme that I don't know, it looks a little washed out or faded to me.
It's like they played it safe, you know. I just was hoping for a little bit something more special, but you know, maybe people like it. Could just be my taste.
Well, hopefully later this year, we're gonna have a new Little Mermaid show in the park to help celebrate that 35th anniversary. And we've got some great videos looking back over the last 35 years of the park on our website, on our YouTube channel. So check that out. Hopping over to Tokyo Disneyland. I did not see this one coming.
No.
If you want to experience Buzz Lightyear at Tokyo Disneyland's Tomorrowland, better ride it now because it is going away and Wreck-It Ralph is moving in.
Yes, I'm not really a Wreck-It Ralph fan. That's just, I don't know, I just haven't gotten into it. But I would say I would not mind if this happened to us at Magic Kingdom.
You know, what I think Yes, I think that the Buzz Lightyear ride at Magic Kingdom is definitely the weaker compared to the one at Disneyland. And it is still very popular. It is still highly rated by guests. But I think it could absolutely use an upgrade. The interesting thing is, the concept art shows that it's basically the same Omnimover style tracked dark ride vehicles, similar style of interactive guns. And the description coming from Tokyo Disney Resort says that this is themed to the candy racing game Sugar Rush. Now, I remember when Universal announced their Mario Kart ride would be a slow-moving tracked dark ride that was interactive. People said, well, it should be high speed. It should be really fast because that's what Mario Kart is. Well, I don't hear those same people complaining yet that that this isn't high speed. This is Sugar Rush. You know, there's not much going to be much rush in this Sugar Rush.
There's no racing yet.
No. But it looks like it will at least be a lot more colorful than the Toy Story ride, the Buzz Lightyear ride, at least the version we have here in Florida. So, yeah, hopefully they will go with the kind of detailed animatronics that Tokyo seems to like to invest in.
Yeah, and they really, so it's going to close in October of this year, and they're planning to open it the end of next year or 2026. So that's really not that much time to do a full revamp, but I mean, it is Tokyo Disney. They probably will do it up big.
So, yeah, as you mentioned, it's going to open in fiscal year 2026. So sometime between late 2025 and 2026. And they're also going to renovate the store that's attached to it, retheme it from Planet M to something themed around Wreck-It Ralph. So you've got until sometime in October of this year to check out Tokyo's version of Buzz Lightyear. This, of course, is just a small part of the makeover of Tokyo's Tomorrowland because they're also shutting down Space Mountain on August 1st. And they are going to completely rebuild their Space Mountain with a whole new design that looks a lot closer to Tron than what they have now.
So. Yeah, so I'll rush there for that. I'm okay without saying farewell to Buzz Lightyear's Astro Blasters.
But I mean,
I will rush for that.
All I can say is that I hope and pray that this retheme of Buzz Lightyear turns out more successfully than what Hong Kong did, because they turned their Buzz Lightyear into Ant-Man, and that is the single most boring interactive dark ride I've ever been on. So,
you know, as long as the guns work, which is what my issue is most of the time with Buzz at Magic Kingdom, I don't know where I'm shooting, if my gun is working, you know, as opposed to like a Men in Black where I could actually see what I'm shooting and I see an interaction, but there's nothing burns my bridges than when I can't see what I'm shooting.
Amen. Amen. All right. Next up, we are leaving Disney's orbit and heading on over to Gatorland, and I am very excited coming up in a few weeks to be attending the 75th anniversary party. They are having a Gatorpalooza to mark the 75 years of Gatorland here in Orlando, Florida. The Gatorpalooza celebration is going to be taking place on May 18th and 19th. 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on both days, and they're going to have a live DJ, vendors, games, activities all day long, including the Gatorland Florida Man Challenge. they did this a few years ago. They started this back in 2021, they've had competitions in the past, like swimming through the swamp and boating across the lake. we'll see how that works out. Hopefully no one will get eaten.
All I know is that the artwork for this poster, if they don't sell these posters, I'm going to riot because it is the coolest poster. Like, you need it framed in your office.
I got to say that for the last few years, Gatorland's creative team, the folks doing their social media, they're doing their art, have been killing it. They really, like, they've got a great sense of humor. They know exactly, like, where they sit in the marketplace. They are not trying to out Disney, you know, or Universal. They are doing their own thing proudly and really embracing just like the bizarre campiness of it all.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's like kitsch, nostalgia. Yeah. They talk into all those things. And, you know, if you were growing up going to Florida theme parks or from Florida, Gatorland's a special place.
Oh, absolutely.
You always remember like your first time holding a baby alligator.
Absolutely. And right now they've got something really special. There was a rare leucistic alligator born back in December named Mystic, and extremely rare. They're not albino. They have a genetic condition where they have these blue eyes, and they're really amazing. And you can also see Jolene, which I think we've talked about her before. Mm-hmm. She is the miracle gator who's missing her top jaw. And they're just two of the residents here, along with the skunk ape.
Yeah.
You know, their cryptids hang out there all the time. If you are a Florida resident, they're doing a half off special for their birthday. So it's only $17 to get in. That's a steal. If you happen to be over there for the birthday, you might just run into me.
Yes. I love it. It looks really fun.
All right. And for our last bit of news in the queue, we are heading on over to Europa Park, where they have debuted a new roller coaster. They've got actually two new roller coasters. Well, one and a half new roller coasters. They've got a new roller coaster called Voltron Nerva. Nervera? You pronounce it. Why am I always... I'm always the one who has to say these words.
Yeah. I was saying Nevera, but you know what? We could be saying it completely
No, I like
wrong.
It. Yeah. I'm going to go with you. Voltron Nerva. And they have also added a Phantom of the Opera-themed virtual reality overlay to their existing Eurostat Coastiality coaster. Say that 10 times fast.
Yeah. Also not on my theme park bingo card.
So, like just about everything else at Europa Park, these are manufactured by Mock Rides. And Voltron Nevera is a multi-launch roller coaster that opened up on April 26th. And I have watched a couple POVs of this one. This one mm-hmm. is crazy. It's got the steepest launch in the world. Basically, it starts out with this little dark ride scene themed to Nikola Tesla. And you're surrounded by all these video plasma lightning effects. The whole car kind of moves up and levitates and shakes, and then it launches you up into a vertical loop at 105 degrees. You go through a whole crazy track. It's one inversion after another. Then you hit a turntable, you rotate backwards, you launch like backwards, forwards, backwards, and like then go through the rest of the car. It is nutty. It is absolutely crazy.
It looks it for sure.
This is definitely one. Europa Park's been on my bucket list for a while, but this is definitely one that I have to check out.
Yes, and what I think is interesting over there is that not only do they have height minimums, they have age minimums.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, you have to be at least 8 years old and at least 51 inches tall in order to ride. And I can see why, because it throws a lot at you. If you watch POVs, we've got one of them up on our website. people are just screaming their heads off because this one seems really intense.
I'd go on it once.
I think it looks great. And they've got a virtual line and a single line, single rider line option. So hopefully you won't have to wait too long for it. This is actually all part of a Croatia themed area. Europa Park, obviously themed to different areas of Europe. This one is inspired by Croatia in the 17th century. Or I'm sorry, Croatia is the 17th land that they've added to the park.
Yeah, it looks really beautiful from what we see. I mean, again, this is just one of those places where I'm like dying to get to. And just to kind of explore, and they have themed food and dining in each of these areas. And this part is up to par with the rest of these beautiful immersive lands.
Yeah. Beyond just having this roller coaster, the land also has an ice cream parlor featuring an animatronic Tesla.
I gotta see that.
Nikola Tesla, not the car.
Not the car.
It's got a restaurant, a gift shop, and a augmented reality mission that you can take place throughout the area.
This sounds suspiciously like Epcot.
Right? Right? They've even got, speaking of Epcot, they have a giant ball that looks suspiciously close to Spaceship Earth right in the middle of the park. And that is home to an indoor roller coaster that is... So you can ride this roller coaster two ways. There's two entrances, two loading stations. You can either ride it without VR, and then it is the Moulin Rouge roller coaster, or you can put on a VR headset and experience the Phantom of the Opera roller coaster. I don't know if this is officially licensed by Andrew Lloyd Webber with music from Phantom of the Opera. They are using the logo from the Broadway show. Public domain. So someone go and ride this for us and let us know if you actually hear the music from the show and the ride.
I'm curious if it makes you ill. You know, I mean, I'm pretty good on roller coasters with the exception of some, you know, backwards motion. So I'm wondering if the VR enhances it for people with motion sickness.
You know, I have personally had very mixed I will say that I have done the Coastiality system designed by Mach was tested on the Freedom Flyer down at Fun Spot in Orlando, and it actually worked really well. I've had a couple experiences on smaller coasters done by them, and I think this is a relatively tame roller coaster. It is, there's no inversions. When I've done VR on like Kraken, that was a bad time. VR on the Big Apple, the New York roller coaster in Las Vegas, not a good idea. Anything with huge hills and inversions, it does not seem to do well with VR. But when you have something that's basically a glorified kiddie coaster in a big black box, it can actually, I think, enhance it. So someone try this for us and let us know how it is.
Let us know.
All right. That is going to bring us to the end of the news in the queue. Before we get to this week's main attraction, let us hear a quick word from our sponsors.
The Attractions Podcast is brought to you by MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. Whether your next vacation is a magical trip to the theme parks, an exciting adventure to the pyramids of Egypt, or just a relaxing cruise on the turquoise waters of the Bahamas, MEI Travel provides premium service and expert advice to help you get the most of your vacation. They are always free of any hidden fees or costs to you. Visit them at mei-travel.com.
It's time for the main attraction.
All right. For this week's main attraction, I was lucky enough to get to go to the Grand Floridian Resort over at Walt Disney World and check out 1900 Park Fair, which has reopened with a reimagined character buffet experience. And I got to meet Tiana in Jazzy New Adventure.
Ooh, I love the adventure outfit.
Yes, which she told me that her mom sewed for her. She pointed out some of the embroidery details in it, and she said she is very excited for guests to join her on her bayou adventure later this year and help her find her secret ingredients.
Oh.
She does have a gumbo that is on the buffet now at 1900 Bark Fair. I thought it was really good. I like the one that she serves in California a little bit better.
Oh, so, did you have strawberry soup?
I did taste the strawberry soup. It was more of like a strawberry yogurt or a strawberry ice cream that had been melted. I thought it when I first saw that on the menu that it might be more of like a, not that I thought it would be savory, but more of like an appetizer, like a cold fruit soup, as opposed, this is more, definitely a dessert soup as opposed to a appetizer soup. But that was tasty, but not quite as tasty as the warm chocolate cake with just a huge bowl of creme anglaise. That is my top pick for dessert. But let's start right off the top. The last time that I visited 1900 Park Fair was a long time ago.
Same.
long many time, many years before the pandemic. And back then, I believe that Mary Poppins and Alice in Wonderland were, I think, the featured characters.
Yes, that's correct. Then.
Mm-hmm. And the entrance, I recall, was right off of the lobby, right where you walked in to the left. I think that is now an emergency exit. And you go and enter from the kind of dining lobby that is further in and down, that sort of shares the same atrium with Citricose and some of the other dining there. So you enter through a very nice long hallway with paintings on the walls and nice couches while you wait for your turn. And then when they bring you in to seat you, the room is just gorgeous. There's this kind of antique, not music box, almost like the giant cuckoo clock outside of It's a Small World in California. Almost like a pipe organ up on the wall. It does not actually like do anything. Kept waiting for it to come alive and do something, but it doesn't. But it is beautiful, and the whole room is lovely. There are portraits of characters around the walls. There's lots of light. There's big chandeliers and these big, comfy bench seats to sit in. Now, they do breakfast there, and you can get... I guess both breakfast and dinner, you can have that famous strawberry soup. Breakfast time is things like hash and cinnamon pull-apart breads, eggs benedict. Now, I was there for dinner. So I started off, like I said, with that gumbo, and it's a chicken and sausage gumbo.
Was it spicy? Because I think that's in the...
It was... it was Disney spicy, which means it would not be spicy by any like human being standard. I would say that the West Coast version had a little more kick, although they're both fairly mild. And Tiana did, when I said I liked her gumbo, she did mention that she recommends some extra Tabasco. So she says that's the secret ingredient, needs to be kicked up. So she tells the truth. But what our waiter, who incidentally had been Be Our Guest since the restaurant opened, and said that he had been opening team and Be Our Guest and had just been transferred out of there to 1900 Park Fair, and I wanted to send him for PTSD treatment and just give him thoughts and prayers, because seeing all the changes that Be Our Guest went through,
I cannot imagine the guest interaction at Be Our Guest if you are working there.
Well, they seemed very happy to be at 1900, and they gave us a great tip. There is a huge pile of peel and eat shrimp, big, nice, meaty shrimp. Peel a couple of those and throw them into the gumbo.
Oh,
that was a very good call. And then from the main courses, the pick I thought was the prime rib. It was a perfect medium rare, nice and fatty in just the right way. And they've got a mac and cheese
that's what I was gonna ask
really
about.
Well, yeah, I am not a huge mac and cheese fan, especially Disney mac and cheese always kind of tastes like Stouffer's to me.
Yeah,
like this was like someone made a real bechamel sauce, you know.
Wow.
someone put some care into that mac.
It looked really
had like
good.
a nice like sharp cheddar, you know. It was an adult mac and cheese. It had a nice chew to it. That was great. The salmon was also really good. There weren't a ton of vegan options. They had a lot of really good salads, but all of them, like, you know, had like the one had bacon in it, or you know, some other, you know, animal product or dairy.
Right.
But they did have a like impossible merguez sausage with like zucchini spaghetti. It was actually really well seasoned. Like you mentioned, you got that spaghetti or that strawberry soup for the dessert, but I really liked the chocolate with the creme, chocolate cake with the creme glaze. So I thought the food was all really solid. But we know that like you don't really go to a Disney character buffet just for the food, because you're there for the character, right?
Any buffet, you know, people have strong opinions. Obama is my favorite. Beer Garden is my personal favorite. That categorizing something of being your favorite when it's not about the food, it's about everything else. You're not going to the buffet for the best food.
So you get four characters, no more, no less. and I will say, they did eventually all four make it to our table. With the timing, the pacing of it was really kind of odd. I don't know if it was just we had a fairly early seating. We were there at like 5 o'clock. There was a mix, I will say, of both invited press folks and influencers and also just regular guests there. So I don't know if the experience would be exactly the same if you were just all regular guests. They didn't seem to identify us as press. They didn't pay any special attention to us. So we did actually get skipped, but the handlers did make sure that we got to see all four characters. So it's, as I mentioned, Tiana in her new adventure suit. Aladdin in his Prince Ali outfit, and he was actually really really good interactive. Cinderella, who was lovely, but we didn't really have a lot to chat about, and Mirabelle from Encanto, who we bonded over our glasses, so that was good.
And something interesting, I saw someone dine there this morning, mm-hmm. and Aladdin was switched out for Snow White. So,
oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So I know that you might not
know.
Want to be set on definitely seeing these.
Yeah. Well,
these things happen.
I'm always reminded from the pre-show of Muppet Vision, where they have the 3Ds, Debbie, Dolores, and Max. You know, the union sent me. The other one was sick. You never know. I'm pretty sure on the website they do specify Aladdin, but you know, princes and princesses are subject to change at any time. You know, you can just swap one in. I thought that all four of the characters did a fine job of interacting. You know, we're adults, so obviously they're not going to spend as much time with us as they would with kids, but I don't have any complaints about that. But here's one thing I will say. They give you this card on your table and they say it's very important that you write down your heart's deepest wish. On the card, and there'll be a special moment. There'll be a magical moment involving that. They like the, when they seated us, they kind of hyped it up.
This Aladdin is the wishing ceremony.
Yes. So this, right? The wishing ceremony. So Aladdin said, you know, he made a point of mentioning and asked us, talked about our wish with us. None of the other characters really mentioned the wish, but we're kind of like, all right, what's this? We just imagine. So there's kind of like a little announcement, a voiceover saying there's going to be a big ceremony. And the four characters just kind of like stand out around the perimeter of the room and do the royal wave. And there's a little bit of a voiceover and they tell everyone to wave their cards. I was waiting for a light effect or the big music organ thing up there to come alive, or the portraits that were all around the room to be animated, or a projection mapping, or mm-hmm. a sound effect, or anything. And literally nothing happens. There's no payoff. There's no razzle dazzle. There's like, it was so weird. 'Cause like I'm spoiled by being on the Disney Cruise Line, and you go to Animator's Palette and you know they have you sketch this thing and then you see that come to life, or you know you have a whole interaction with the character and there's a big buildup and a moment that feels my wife still will like gets teary when she remembers about when we were on one of the boats and like the Beast and Beauty came out and danced at our dinner, and like that was special because there was a buildup and there was lighting and sound and music, and this was just a big nothing burger.
I love Topolino's Terrace and I do that brunch like sort of often. They will come and dance through the room.
Was so underwhelming. And I like I said, they've been open for a few weeks now. You know, April 10th was early the official April, yeah. opening. People are paying money for this. I did not feel like we were waiting for something to happen, and it didn't really feel like much of anything. And I gotta say that in final analysis, it was a solid buffet. I definitely did not leave hungry. I got to see all four characters that were promised. Maybe they just shouldn't even build up the wish thing if that's all there is to it. Like, I don't know. But I gotta compare it to we had the buffet, the World of Color dinner at the Grand Californian over in DCA. So for almost the exact same price per person, I would say that the Grand Californian's buffet was much better. It had a larger selection. It had, a bigger salad bar. It had more soups. It had flatbreads. It had, more carving options. And while it didn't have characters necessarily, though you get that if you come from the morning, you got 3 hours of valet parking. Which I think is worth like $75.
Yeah.
And you get reserved seating for World of Color. And I would say that reserved seating for World of Color is worth more to me than a drive-by from Four Princesses. So
yeah, it's 1900 Park Fair. So I'm just going to assume it could rest on its laurels. Which
exactly.
Is legacy.
It doesn't need my review. Absolutely. It is going to fill up and that's great. That's fine. And if you want to be guaranteed that your kids get to meet these princesses and, get a big meal, then this is great. But I feel like after being closed for so long, the idea that they were reimagining.
Yes.
I think they can imagine a little bigger than that, can't they? Like,
I think so, yeah.
Like I really feel like that for the prices they're charging, that, even just setting up some video projectors and some subwoofers to have like some magical moment on the ceiling you know, some indoor, you know, fireworks projections or something, just to have some little payoff, a shooting star, even. I'll take a freaking fiber optics to shooting star. Give me something for my $60 something plus tax and tip, right?
Yeah. It's just, I feel like with buffet dining, character dining, especially the space is a character too. And like, I feel like at Storybook Dining at Artist Point, the space is a character. It feels like it comes to life when they come out and dance in the trees.
Yeah.
And they, like you said, they did this big like reno and they were hyping up all the stuff we added. And, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be running back there.
Well, if you want to go to experience a character dining somewhere other than 1900 Park Fair, they've got 11 other locations around Walt Disney World Resort. Some of them are fixed price or buffets. Some of them are family style. We've got a rundown of all of them from Akarush. I can never pronounce that.
Neither can I. Akerhouse.
Yeah. All the way through Cinderella's Royal Table, Crystal Palace, and Tusker House over at Animal Kingdom.
I was gonna say the
only one that I have never heard anyone say anything bad about is the Topolino's breakfast. You know,
I mean, it's elevated dishes, you know, and it's choose your own entree, so you really can't go wrong. And I can tell you, I've eaten there maybe like three times the last year. I love it so much. It is like the best value for a character buffet, and they're so interactive. And they dance around and they really like pay really special attention to every table every single time. I've experienced that, and great food. So I think for value, plus it's beautiful in that space.
And I've always got a soft spot in my heart for the Crystal Palace over Magic Kingdom, Winnie the Pooh. Great staff over there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've also got on our website a little note before you go. If you're interested in 1900 Park Fair, most important thing is that you are going to want a reservation. This is a hot ticket. Best way to do it is if you have a hotel reservation, you can make your entire 10 days stay worth of reservations at 60 days out. So try at 60 days out to get a reservation for your very last day. That's your best bet, because those go fast.
Oh yeah. I was staying at the Grand last week for like a little staycation, and just for the heck of it, I kept pulling up the walk up to see if this would pop up. Not that I was planning on going. I just wanted to know. And you know, a lot of them do pop up in the walk-up. I see Topolino's. I did not see this at all pop up in the walk-up for dinner or breakfast. I mean, as to be expected, but...
No. And, you know, my constructive criticism aside about the, you know, show quality, I will say I'm very grateful. Thank you to Disney for hosting us for the invite on behalf of Attractions Magazine, so that I could check that out for you guys. And, we should have a video of the interactions with all those characters up on our YouTube real soon. And in the meantime, MEI and Mouse Fan Travel, as always, can help you plan your trip there. All right. I think that is just about going to bring us to the end. But before we go, let's take a look back at some of the comments that we've gotten. Faith Eclipsebeth says that Phantom of the Opera has staying power. That story's been around for well over 100 years. Looks like it'll be around a little bit longer. Michael Bingham says he hasn't been to 1900 Park Fair in a very long time. And when he was sick on vacation. That doesn't sound like a lot of fun. Also giving a shout out to Goofy's Kitchen at the Disneyland Hotel for PB&J pizza.
That's one of my favorite character buffets. So good.
I've been way too long since I have tried that one. That is a fan favorite, but not necessarily a great value proposition.
The character interaction there.
Yeah.
I have to just tell this funny story. I was seated like with my back to the buffet, And it was spooky season. We were like doing a big brunch before going to Knott's for like Knott's Scary Farm. Uh-huh. So I guess my senses were heightened and Minnie came from behind me and I didn't see her. And I screamed like a jump scare, insane. And so for our entire meal, she would be in the dining room and hide behind poles and then do like the I see you and these motions. And I was like, it was the best character experience I ever had. And it was hilarious.
That's awesome. That is so awesome. Well, if you want to have an experience like that, give a call over to MEI and Mouse Fan Travel, our sponsors. And we also want to remind you to please like and subscribe and give us a rating and a review wherever you listen to us, whether that be Apple Podcasts or Spotify or here on YouTube.
Yep.
And of course, please follow us on attractionsmagazine.com. Search for Attractions Magazine on your favorite social media accounts. Carly, where can folks find you on the socials?
Yes, I am on Instagram at Adventures by Carly, and I am on X at Carly Caramana.
And you can find me at Eskuberski and at The Unofficial Guides, or over at theunofficialguides.com, where you can pick up copies of my books. And until next week, we hope that you folks stay safe, try something new, but most importantly, have fun. And we will see you again next time. Bye.
Bye.